we forget that we get an epic ending to our story. And Jesus got an epic ending to his story when it looked like everything was over and you should throw in the towel and quit. He, like, God came through for him. And I love that. Like, if we're headed in a direction with God and we're going to have, like, the ability to risk everything and our faith and stake, you know, the end of our story on him, like, he does come through for us. We get a resurrection.
Welcome to the We Collide podcast. We're a growing community of everyday chicks colliding with Jesus in our mess, our pain, our joy, and our stories. We value showing up as we truly are, so that's what you'll find here. Walls and masks being torn down so that we can allow Jesus to meet us where we truly are and hear about other women doing the same. We can't wait to collide with you.
Welcome to the We Collide podcast. I'm Willow Weston, the founder and director of Collide, and today I'm hanging out with one of Collide's amazing staffers, Kristen Matala. I call her the Unicorn Whisperer, and in fact, recently I tried to set this amazing woman up with someone I know, and when he asked me for her contact info, I had this super awkward moment where I realized I was sending him a phone number of a girl named the Unicorn Whisperer, and he wouldn't know what to call you. Oh, that was awesome. This girl loves riding scooters. She loves high tops. In fact, she collects them. She loves Whole Foods and organic snacks that scare me. But most of all, she has a deep love for her family and for Jesus, and she just took a major leap of faith and left the business world to come join our crazy staff. She's full of passion and charisma, and I'm so privileged to work with her. Kristen, I'm glad we get to hang out on the podcast today.
I know, me too. This is going to be super fun. Yeah. Hanging out with the Unicorn Whisperer.
Totally. How do you like it that I send your contact out to people and they don't know your first name?
Oh, that's the most amazing thing.
I need to change that.
No, please don't.
You don't think I should change it to Kristen Matala?
I don't know. Maybe at some point, but just a little bit longer, like another month or so.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Well, Kristen, as you know, because you were a huge part of it, we just shaped and crafted a conference for hundreds of women to center around the passage in Mark 5 where Jesus collides with Jairus, who's this religious leader, and he comes to Jesus and he's pleading on his daughter's behalf to heal her because she's sick. She's like this 12-year-old girl and she's sick and he's desperate. And Jesus goes with this guy, but on his way, he's stopped by a woman who's been bleeding for 12 years, the same amount of time as the girl is old. And I'm just wondering, like, as you think about that passage and you are a part of helping form it and teach it and craft it at this conference, how do you think Jairus must feel in that moment when Jesus stops to help someone when he's supposed to be helping him?
Yeah, I think that couldn't have been easy for Jairus to watch that. I think sometimes we approach God with a plan and a mission, and Jesus agreed to go along with Jairus to heal his daughter. And so Jairus is like, has this purpose and this plan. We're heading to my house. And then there's this interruption that turns into an obstacle maybe in Jairus's mind. And I think, like, if he has a personality type like mine, I would be super frustrated, angry, upset, like not understanding like why he would stop. Like, we're trying to get to my daughter. She's dying. Like, what are we doing? And so I think that there would have been a lot of confusion.
Right. And like, hey, what are you doing? Like, you said you'd help me and now you're helping everyone but me.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, he's probably like annoyed at Jesus a little bit. And then all probably the woman too. You know, I'm like, I have plans and I like strategies. I'm going somewhere. And if someone's getting in the way of that, like, I could see that there would be just so much frustration.
Yeah.
And plus it's in the midst of a crowd and there's so many people talking and voices and.
Right. Lady, lay off Jesus.
Yeah, come on. Like, I got here first, so. Bump it.
Like. Yeah, I got here first. Yeah. Do you feel like you've ever felt that way? I mean, have you ever felt like God is stopping to help other people, to heal other people, to give other people what they want, but not you?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of things that, you know, I desire for my life, goals that I have, whether that's in my career or relationships, you know, like wanting to be married and have kids and all these things. And when you start serving all the people in and around me, you start to see, oh, God really showed up for this person. Like, they got healed. And like, why does my back still hurt? And like, that's like 10 weddings. And I'm like still trying to like get set up on a date, you know? Mm-hmm. And it feels like it feels like speed bumps or road bumps or obstacles that like I'm hitting, and I'm like, God's not like smooth sailing for everyone else. Mm-hmm. So that is I think a really hard part of sometimes our walks with Jesus, mm-hmm. is when it feels like it's smooth sailing for everyone else but me.
Right. Yeah. How do you think envy messes with us as women? That whole like, I've been, you know, a bridesmaid, mm-hmm. 10 times,
yeah,
but never the bride.
Or 20, or, you know.
Oh, 20.
Wow. No, I'm just, no, not that many, but sometimes it feels like
that,
you know.
About what a good friend you are, though. Yeah. But how do you think envy messes with us as women? I mean, mm-hmm. I think it's so easy to do that comparison thing. Like for Jairus to see this woman and go, she got her healing and I'm not getting mine.
Yeah. I think that there's sort of two parts to that. Like I think envy and jealousy cause me to react and do things in certain ways. But then also sort of on the back end of that is sort of what it does to me internally. And I think starting there sort of shines light on why I'm reacting in certain ways. So for example, if like I'm comparing myself, like I think that's kind of a normal thing to do. She's married, I'm not married. She had a wedding, I didn't have a wedding. And like sometimes I'll like, you just make those observations and you go with it and you kind of move along. But what happens a lot of the time, especially to me, is it's not just she got a husband and I didn't get a husband. It starts to, I think shame creeps in and cuts at like my identity and my worth. Like I'm not good enough. I'll never be chosen. And then the next thing you know, it's not about my situation just looking different than theirs. It's this whole internal struggle of not feeling acceptable or worthy and sort of getting cut off from what God's saying about me. And then in turn, like out of that, I start having reactions, whether that's withdrawing from people or isolating myself, being like upset and irritable and like frustrated at situations. And then that kind of can lead into things like gossiping with other people, placing judgment on someone else's situation. Like I thought I was doing it the right way and this person didn't, and they're still getting the blessing. And I think like that just is kind of like a messy, like unhealthy place to be. But I'm like doing that because I started like comparing and contrasting myself, mm-hmm. with other people's situations.
Right. Envy is so, there's so much more to it. It's not, mm-hmm. just, oh, I'm comparing myself. It leads into all of these other things. And next thing you know, you're down a road that you know isn't good. Mm-hmm. And you've gotten there through starting with comparing yourself, which is dangerous, right?
Yeah.
It sounds so dangerous.
It totally is. And I think we sort of like hit this crossroads and we can decide to just make these general observations about how my life is different than her life. But when we sort of decide to like go to the pity party and like enter into all of this self-doubt and insecurity and shame gets in there and starts messing everything that we know to be true about ourselves and what God says about us, and we start to question that. Mm-hmm. And then next thing you know, I'm questioning who I am as a person. I'm questioning my calling. There's all sorts of ways that I just sort of bury myself in insecurity because I started to struggle with jealousy and envy.
Right.
And
you told me a funny thing last week. You said that your sister tells you you can, what does she say about the pity party?
Yeah, the pity party. She's like, you can go to, like, if you can go to the pity party, but just make sure to leave early. Like, don't stick around till like past midnight. Because I think like it's normal, like I said, to compare our situations. And I think disappointment and frustration or normal. Like that's a normal human reaction, I think, that Jairus would have had in that moment. Like his friends come over and they're like, dude, your daughter died. So like, don't even bother the teacher anymore. Like I would like feeling disappointed and sad. And those are like, I've realized like those are okay emotions. Like I don't always want to show that. Like, oh, I'm like showing up like 10th wedding that I'm in. And I just put on a brave face and act like everything's okay. But actually being like, oh, okay, this makes me kind of sad because I feel like God's forgotten about me, or he skipped over me, or, you know, I feel like God's like Oprah sometimes, like handing out cars, like you get a car, you get a car, you get a car. And I'm like the last one sitting in the audience and he walks out the back door and forgot to like give me my blessing. Mm-hmm. So I just, sometimes I do go to the pity party, but I'm like, just got to like leave early mm-hmm. and not listen to all the voices that are there.
Right. In the like, party. I think it's okay for us to engage our emotions and feel disappointed and feel sad and really become self-aware about how we're feeling. But
yeah,
I love that line that your sister
I know,
says
it was
to you
so because great.
Show up to the pity party, ladies, but leave early. It's like, don't mm-hmm. stay there too long because yeah. it's not going to help you.
And it doesn't help you. And yeah. the longer that you stay at the pity party, I think the more we internalize the messages that we hear there about you're not good enough and you're not worthy and all mm-hmm. of these things that lead us just continuing down this path of comparison and jealousy. And then mm-hmm. it sort of, I don't know, can isolate you from relationships that would sort of maybe actually support you in walking through disappointment and disillusionment.
Mm-hmm. Well, swimming in envy is never a good idea, right? It's just like swimming through muck.
Yeah.
I want to talk just for a second, kind of a side note, but you've helped me to understand more what it's like to be in your 30s and be single. And I'm hoping you can share some examples with people listening, but I asked you a couple weeks ago to share with me some of the ways that you often can feel super alone in your singleness and the way that your singleness can feel so highlighted to the point where you can struggle with envy because it's so, mm-hmm. it's got 10 exclamation points on it. One of the examples that stood out to me the most that you gave me was when you get asked to babysit on Valentine's Day so that your married friends can go out. And I read that and I was like, oh my gosh, I mean, that hurts mm-hmm. my heart.
Yeah.
How do you experience this continuous reminder that your longing hasn't been fulfilled?
That can be like really difficult, you know, when it's highlighted and people point it out. And I don't think that people necessarily are intentional about, oh, I'm like asking you to do something, but not really considering your feelings or mm-hmm. knowing that like I struggle with certain points during the year feeling like more alone, like the holidays. My friend asked me last October, she's like, how are like you feeling about being single? I'm like, I'm doing pretty well. Like, but I'm like, the holidays are the worst because you see people that you don't really see that often. And then they're asking questions and have all these hypotheses about why you're single. And have you tried this? And have you met this person? And I'm like, so that makes it really hard. And one of the things that has helped me like in those moments of people saying things like, you know, like, you're so awesome. Like, how is it that you're single? Like, what's the problem? Like, what's going on? There's got to be, something has to be wrong. And I viewed my singleness as a problem for a really long time, that it's a problem that needs to be fixed. And like over the past few years, I've started to sort of reframe that and realizing that it's not a problem. It's actually like a process I'm in. And I'm starting to like ask myself, like, what's the purpose in the process that you're going through? And I wish people would ask people that are older and single or just that are going through seasons of waiting, like, what's the purpose in this? Like, how is God showing up for you? Because it's not framed as a problem anymore. It's framed as like purpose and potential. And that helps me compare my situation less because I start to see the beauty in being single. And I realize that this isn't a really wonderful season that I'm in. It doesn't mean that some days aren't hard and I don't struggle with jealousy or comparison. So I think that's really helped me reshift that. Just thinking about the way we approach people that are in situations that are different than ours, especially when they're disillusioned with maybe their I'm like, it doesn't always have to be a problem. Mm-hmm. And that kind of makes people feel worse. If someone's like, you know, maybe I'm feeling fine about being single and someone's like, what's the problem? I'm like, well, I thought you make me feel worse because apparently it's like a no problem. But anyways,
I think reframing your story, mm-hmm. reframing the way you're viewing your story when you're struggling with envy, rather than sitting there and hoping and continuing to hope that you have what someone else has, mm-hmm. reframing and asking the Lord, what do you have for me in the midst of this right mm-hmm. here, right now, right? Yeah. Reframing is huge. The definition of the word envy, I looked it up.
Nice.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's this, a feeling of discontented or resentful longing aroused by someone else's possessions, qualities, or luck. And I find that we spend a lot of time discontent with what we have and who we are, and we spend a lot of time wishing that we could have or be what others are. And I'm wondering, how do you see women leaning into envy? I know that you're describing in your own life that oftentimes it's hard when you're single and you want to be married and you want kids, and that's a way that you can feel envious. We're looking at Jairus envying the woman who got her miracle and he hasn't gotten his. Yeah. How do you see us as women leaning into envy?
Yeah. So it's so interesting that you asked that question, because just as like a side note, I was hanging out with my goddaughter over Christmas and she's 4 years old, and we were sitting in the back seat of the car, and I realized how early this starts for women. She's 4 years old and she's just talking to me about Christmas. I got this, my friend got this. And then it starts as like a general comparison. And then she moved into like, well, she got five of this and I got three of this. And next thing you know, I'm like, this little four-year-old, it was like heartbreaking to me, because she's now questioning her worth based on what another like little girl in her life has. And she's making judgments on herself. Well, maybe this person didn't love me enough because they didn't get me what she got. And she has more things, and that means she's better than me. And it shocked me how early it starts and how we start to live out of that. I think it ruins our relationships with other women. I think that's one of the most life-giving things in life is female friendships and like this sisterhood that we get to build. But if we're constantly contrasting ourselves with what everyone else says and like has, then we isolate ourselves and we pull away from people. We start to pick at other people. We're all of a sudden the judge on whether or not they were worthy enough to get something that I wanted. And I think it devalues other women when we do that. And that leads us into places of gossiping about other people, which then lead to broken relationships. And it just ends up like this really messy, messy web. And I think we see that in like TV and the media all the time, like women just fighting and picking at each other. And it's like, the root of that, I feel like, is a lot of envy and jealousy, and they have something that I like, a bigger house, a better car, a better looking husband, like a bigger diamond ring or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, just, a more meaningful life, whatever it is. Or they figured out their calling and I haven't. I mean, you can go down the line. It's interesting though, because I think as women, when we do that, we have such a hard time celebrating for each other.
Yeah,
we have such a hard time saying there's room for all of us to be successful. There's room for all of us to get our miracle. There's room for all of us to feel like we can do amazing things. Mm-hmm. You know, I think sometimes we not only struggle when I'm thinking of one of my dearest friends who years ago lost her babies. Mm-hmm. And it was probably within a month or two that I got pregnant with my first. And that was one of the most painful conversations I've ever had to have someone where I took her on a walk and had to share like what seemed like good news for me, the news that she wanted for herself. And I didn't know how we were going to, how we were going to navigate that. Would we still be friends? How would we have this conversation? And that person almost 20 years later is one of my dearest friends because we had the conversation and the conversation was raw and it was messy and it was hard and it was honest. And we had to figure out what scripture says for us to do, which is mourn with those who mourn and celebrate with those who celebrate. And I think as women, we have a hard time doing that. I think we have a hard time saying, you know, when I'm single and want to be married, it's hard for me to say, oh good, I'm so glad you're engaged, you know? Yeah. And we have a hard time letting people in on our joys when we know they're mourning, right? We have a hard time doing both together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's power in just being with someone like in their disappointment, even when you're in a moment of celebration. I think just those honest, like genuine conversations, because the last thing, if I'm going to like my friends who are married and just in a moment of vulnerability saying, I'm really struggling, like being happy for people. And it's so frustrating that I'm still single and it's like another year's gone by. Like when they respond with like pity or like just solutions right away. Like, well, have you tried this? Or, you know, maybe like you'll find it when you're least expecting it. All of these different things like that doesn't really help. Just like being with me in my pain and being like, yeah, that must be really difficult or really hard. I think that grows these like healthy female relationships that move us out of comparison and jealousy because, you know, and just the way we respond and engage with people out of empathy really helps. I mean, I feel less jealous. I feel like I put it out there and I said that I'm disappointed and I'm frustrated to someone that's in a season of celebration mm-hmm. and then responding with love and empathy and just kind of being there for me. Then sort of has allowed me to show up and be genuinely happy for the season that they're in, even while I'm still waiting for that.
Right. Yeah, I think about, you know, you were talking about how envy starts so young. And I think about Bella, my daughter, she's, you know, 13. Mm-hmm. And she does gymnastics 5 days a week for mm-hmm. almost 4 hours. Like she does a lot of gymnastics.
A lot.
And there has been all sorts of different experiences, but there was a point 1 year where she got moved up to a higher level and someone that she did gymnastics with didn't. And that girl made it really difficult for her and kind of created some drama and some hardship and created some tears for Bella mm-hmm. because she was, I think, feeling like she was comparing herself and wishing she also would have been invited to go up to a higher level.
Yeah.
And Bella and I had this really great conversation where we got to talk about this. And I said, Bella, never let someone make you feel bad for your success or for mm-hmm. your joy or for your hard work. Mm-hmm. We need to be girls who celebrate each other's successes
exactly.
and allow it to be okay if someone else gets the job promotion or someone else gets the ring or someone mm-hmm. else gets, you know, called up to do something that you always wanted to do. You mm-hmm. will have your day and people will be there for you celebrating because you celebrated for them. But I think as women and even as young girls, we have a really hard time just saying, wow, I'm super happy for you that you got what you always wanted, mm-hmm. even if it's also what we've always wanted.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when we get to a place where we realize that there's more than enough to go around, that just because someone got something that you've been waiting and wishing for doesn't mean that like you'll never get that too. And I think that really shifted things mm. for me because it's sort of like this deficit mindset that if God gave those five people something, then there's just nothing for me. And I think that's really obvious in the story with Jairus and his daughter. It's like the one woman got the healing and then he ends up getting a resurrection. Like it looked different than maybe what he would have imagined it to look like. But sometimes God doesn't show up for us like he's going to show up for everyone else. And I think when we realize that, then we can be really happy and excited for people and walk alongside them. And I've noticed in my own life, like even if you just take a second and like assess how you feel after you react, because I know how I feel when someone like is maybe getting promoted in a way that like I would have really wanted to. Like I cannot be there for them. I can like say things like I could critique them, maybe then like, you know, build them up or say things or talk about it with other people. I don't feel good after I do that. Mm-hmm. Like it's not a life-giving action. Like I feel gross. I don't feel right. Something feels off versus like getting to a place where I'm like, I know God's called you to this and he's called me to something similar. And I see you getting promoted and God's taking you to the next level and just being excited for them. Like if I feel better mm-hmm. just physically.
Yeah. You like who you are. More.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can sleep better at night because you've been a good person celebrating what a sister has.
Exactly. And then you can learn from the other people. Just there's so much that you gain from linking up with someone and being there for them and supporting them and celebrating, even when you're not getting what you want. Like you never know how God could use that like act of faith of just, I'm going to choose to celebrate with you instead of cut you down.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that if we can pause and look at the ways that we're reacting, I think we'll start to notice what brings us life.
Yeah, good word. Hey, I love this passage of scripture and how Jesus encourages us in Matthew 5:5. He says, you're blessed when you're content with just who you are. No more, no less. That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought.
What, so beautiful.
Yeah, what sticks out to you about those words?
Can I look at that real quick?
Yeah, totally.
Was the,
I'll read it again. You're blessed when you're content with just who you are, no more, no less. That's the moment you find yourselves proud owners of everything that can't be bought.
I love that part where it says the proud owners of everything that can't be bought. I think this topic of comparison and jealousy, it's easy to feel like we don't have enough or we're less than or not really proud of my situation. Like you show up to an event with a bunch of people and you're like, this is all that I have to bring and it's really not enough. And I don't feel good enough to be around all these people. Like we assume everyone has everything together. And I think that we can find those moments with Jesus where we're content with everything that he's given us and we can enter into this place of gratitude. Cause that, like for me, like that really helps. Me being more content with my season and my situation is like, it sounds so cheesy, but counting my blessings and entering into that space of gratitude, you realize that God really has equipped me with more than enough for this season. And if I'm headed in a direction with him, like Jairus was headed in a direction with Jesus, and like Jesus tells him, I'm going to handle this situation. And then you start to realize like I've brought everything to Jesus and he's in control and he'll handle the miracle that I'm believing for. I don't know. That verse is so good.
Mm-hmm. It is so good. I love the idea that we're proud owners of everything that can't be bought. Mm-hmm. A lot of our envy is things that around things that can be bought, mm-hmm. but we have a lot that can't be bought that yeah. we're proud owners of.
Exactly.
So back to this story with Jairus and mm-hmm. the bleeding woman. So Jesus, by his power, heals the woman who's been bleeding, and he's talking to her, and then Jairus' people show up and they say, your daughter died. Why bother the teacher? In your own life and circumstances, have you been tempted to just say, why bother God with this?
Yeah, it's like, why bother God if he's not listening? That's how I feel. He's mm-hmm. obviously listening, or it's not going to matter. I've prayed 100 prayers. Like, what's the point of throwing up a few more? And like in those moments, it's easy. Like Jairus could have just walked off with his buddies and mm-hmm. left. Like there had to have been so many voices talking to him. Like, why? Don't bother the teacher anymore. Like, don't ask him for anything. Like, it's over. It's done with. And yeah, I over Christmas I was talking with one of my friends that's been struggling with dealing with a miscarriage in her life, and she's like, there's no point. She's like, I'm done going to God and asking him for things. And my friend and I were like, well, can we pray for you? And she's like, that's actually probably not going to make a difference, but like, go ahead and do it. And I think we get to these places where mm-hmm. like, that's just like a painful place to be in when you feel like God hasn't been listening. And it's easy to want to just like stop everything that we know to do, but we're just we're frustrated and kind of giving up.
Well, I think about this bleeding woman who's been bleeding for 12 years. And I don't assume that this is the first time that she's prayed or shown mm-hmm. up to synagogue or hoped that something would change.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, God's story for her life for 11 years and however many days, mm-hmm. she didn't get mm-hmm. what she was asking for. But for whatever reason,
yeah,
because she showed up mm-hmm. that one day yeah. and asked God for it, she got it.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't say, why bother? Why bother him? It's been 11 years and 364 days. So why bother him today? She didn't do that. Yeah. And I think there's something amazing about that.
Exactly. There's this book that I was reading and it said you could be one prayer away from your next miracle. And that always I'm always reminded of that when I get to a place where I don't want to try again or like, what's one more prayer going to do? I think that sometimes like stories like this woman, like she mustered up the courage and the faith to go out there and risk everything and reach out and touch Jesus. Like that's like that should motivate us maybe to action. Like there's this new song by Bethel called Raise a Hallelujah, and I'm totally obsessed with it. But there's this line, it says, I'm going to raise a hallelujah in the middle of the unbelief. And sometimes I think just getting on our knees and worshiping Jesus before we get the promise it rejuvenates our faith. Like mm-hmm. It still might be 100 prayers left, but at least like we're reconnecting with the source who has all the power. And that sort of gives us the ability to like keep putting one foot in front of the other, like moving in a direction with Jesus.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that I necessarily believe that it's about some sort of like filling some quota of prayers.
Yeah.
You know, like mm-hmm. God's like, okay, you pray this many prayers, so I'm finally going to give in. But it's about you engaging God by faith, believing upon Him for your story and mm-hmm. trusting Him that your story is a part of a grander story. And I want to talk about that for a second, because I'm certain this bleeding woman in this story spent, you know, years of her life having no idea God was going to do this crazy thing with her life. And she probably struggled wanting other people's lives. And I'm certain that she had no idea that her story would be a part of a greater story. And I'm certain she wondered why God hadn't healed her yet. And then on this particular day, Jesus honored her faith. He actually says in scripture, your faith has healed you. And she got her miracle right there in the middle of a watching crowd, right? Mm-hmm. So when Jairus saw her get her miracle and he didn't get his, tell me in that moment, because then I want to break this down with you, with our friends listening. How do you think he felt in that moment?
I feel like he could have gone two ways. Mm-hmm. Like he could have been like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. Did you just see that? Like she got healed. Like I'm with Jesus. We're headed to my daughter's house and she's going to get healed too. Like that mm-hmm. celebration thing that you were talking about. But then on like the more like human side, like for me, realistically, if I was like to do some like self-assessment, if I was in Jairus' shoes, I would have been really frustrated and upset just being like, what, like, is there enough power to go around? Is her, like, she got this miracle. Like, does that mean that, like, Jesus, do I not get mine now? Like, did I get bumped out of the line? Do I need to go back and ask again? I think he would have been really confused, mm-hmm. mixed in with like some frustration.
Well, and I definitely think it is almost like there's two ways you can go, because Jesus actually looks at Jairus in that moment because he can see you're going to go one of two ways. And we all have one of two ways we can go. And Jesus says, don't be afraid, just believe. And it's like Jesus knows we're either going to operate by fear here or we're going to operate by faith. How has fear played a role in your singleness and your longing for a family? And how has belief played a role?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I want to answer that kind of through the lens of how Jesus responded to Jairus. And I have it right here. And it's in the message. And it says, Jesus overheard what they were talking about, Jairus and his friends. And he said, don't listen to them, just trust me. Hmm. And that like just is so powerful, because when fear creeps in, it's about who I'm listening to. Hmm. And that can be just the only, like, shame in my life. You're not good enough. You don't have enough value. No one's ever going to choose you. And that sort of cuts at my identity. And then fear creeps in that way. But fear also creeps in through what other people are saying. When, like I said earlier, when people frame my situation as a problem, fear creeps in. See, I told you you were a problem. I told you something was wrong. Mm-hmm. It's never going to work out for you. Mm-hmm. And then I also think what I'm listening to, and like that's like even what I'm watching on TV or like the music that I listen to, I see the way that maybe the world is approaching like a life as a single person, and how I feel maybe God's calling me to live into this season, and fear starts creeping. Like, shouldn't you be doing it like they're doing it? Look, they're having so much more fun than you're having, and you're missing out. And it's just the fear comes at me from all sides. Mm-hmm. And when I get to that place, then I'm sort of like left by myself, and I'm like, yeah, like I'm a problem. Like this is never going to work out. Especially when there's like no hope in sight. Like that's like, I think the hardest part about waiting for something is when you're praying for rain, but there's like no clouds in the sky. And like, what do you, like, you can sit there with your fear, which I've done a lot. I'm like actually really good at that. Or
yeah, like, I'm a pro at that.
I'm kind of an expert.
I'm really good at that.
Just me my whole life, you know? And so I've really had to learn the tools to be able to pull, to draw myself out of that space with fear and start listening to faith. And for me, the biggest way that I'm able to do that is really like other people's stories. and other people's experiences, just like we did at our last event. Willow, you asked people, like, if you've ever struggled, like, if cancer has affected, like, your own life or anyone in your family, please stand up. We had all these women stand up based on these different commonalities around pain. And when you realize that you're not the only one waiting to get married, or you're not the only one waiting to get healed, and you're not the only one waiting for your marriage to get restored, I think that builds my faith, because I see God showing up for other people. And I really actually have, like, started to internalize the belief that God could do it for them. And, like, he'll also do it for me. It may not look the same way. Mm-hmm. And so that builds my faith. Like, going back and reading the word of God, like, there's so many stories of, like, I've really been focusing on just people, like, heading in a direction with Jesus. There's going to be roadblocks and obstacles and all these things that come up that fear is going to, like, use to tell me that it's never going to work out and you're never going to get your miracle and your promise isn't coming. But realizing that all those obstacles haven't caught Jesus by surprise. Like, he's not like, oh, oopsie. Like, bummer, Kristen, like, I didn't really see that coming. So, like, we'll just move on to the next person. He doesn't forget about me. Mm-hmm. And that's helped, like, build my faith of just, like, I don't know, like, that idea of, like, getting on my knees and worshiping God for the way that he's going to come through for me before he comes through for me. Like, you texted me the other day. You're like, get out your dancing shoes. I think I told you, like, I don't know if it's actually going to happen for me. And you encouraged me in this moment of, like, no, like, God could, like, get your dancing shoes out. Like, he's going to come through for you. Like, get your shoes out in advance, because we're going to celebrate God coming through for you. And sometimes you just got to remember that.
And that's helpful. And I love what you're saying about, instead of looking at what someone else has and wishing you had that, looking at it, deeply celebrating for another and saying, if God can do that for them, imagine what God can do for me. That's such a different way of operating with God and in relationship with others than saying, oh, look, God stopped for them, but he doesn't stop for me. It's such a different perspective. And Jesus is challenging Jairus, and he's saying, like, you can either listen to the voices of fear, or you can listen to a voice that of faith. You choose, like, in this moment, you choose. And I think as women, we need to be women who tell fear to go to hell,
yeah,
to shut
exactly.
up, to get out of the way, that fear has no hold over us. And I have to do this too, where, like, my voice of faith has to begin to preach to my voice of fear, letting it know that it has no business in my life, because you have these moments in life where fear kind of overtakes you. And Jesus knew that. And I love the Message version that you read, because I love that he says, don't listen to them. Don't listen to them. We have all these voices, whether they're actual voices, you know, our parents' voices, or, you know, our, like, haters in our lives, or people who are jealous of us, or people who don't like us for whatever reason, or our critics, or we have, you know, our boss's voice, our spouse's voice, our sibling's voice. But then we also have these internal voices, voices of insecurity, and they start to lie to us. And next thing you know, we start to believe, like, good isn't coming for us.
Exactly.
And I love that Jesus is just, trust me. Just trust me. Like, I'm about to do something.
Exactly.
Awesome.
And that should, like, build our excitement. And just not, like, I mean, it's risky, like, what you're talking about, like, telling fear to go to hell. And, like, we're going to believe, like, it's one thing for you to tell someone when you're, like, living on the side of the promise that, like, just, like, have some faith, you know, but, like, when you choose in that moment to have faith, like, it's a really risky, tough thing to do, but it's possible. Like, I think you and I both are in different places in our life where, like, we have to grab onto Jesus and believe him for something when we don't have it yet. And it costs us everything.
Right.
And it's not going to be easy to do that, to wake up every day and be like, I'm going to risk faith again, because I'm risking disappointment. I'm risking failure. I'm risking all of these things that fear tries to tell us. All these horrible things are going to happen, so don't risk. But we choose to, recognizing that God's in control. And I don't know. Like, I'm here to tell you guys, like, you can do it. Like, you cannot have what you want and still do that and still risk.
But. Yeah. So Jesus is asking Jairus to have the same kind of faith that Jairus just witnessed this bleeding woman have. And it's amazing how God is going to use her faith to hold up Jairus's faith when he's losing it, right? And because of that, fear didn't overtake him, but instead he ends up getting his miracle too in Mark chapter 5. And I mean, it's amazing to me that she could have been healed any other day, but God chose to heal her on this day. And I'm wondering, how does it encourage you in your story and in your longing and in your envy to hear these words? Your story is a part of a grander story, and what God is going to do is going to blow your mind.
That gets my hopes up. And it helps situate my story in a purpose that's beyond what I could have ever dreamed for myself. I think that sometimes I wonder, I'm like, well, why God, why'd you have to choose me? Like, couldn't I just have gotten married at like 21, like everyone else, you know? And so but I believe that God, there's a purpose in my testimony. There's a purpose in my story. And I am excited about that. I want to be used for God's greater purpose. Like if he can use my story, and I've already seen him doing that in the lives of other young women that, you know, feel alone or isolated and like they just have sort of a similar struggle that I've sort of like walked through, and being able to support them and come alongside them is a really beautiful thing. And I think that there's lessons that God has taught me that I wouldn't have gotten had I not have had to have like this longer season of waiting. Mm-hmm. And it's just this revelation that we get sometimes, that kind of makes it worth it. And I think when we're open to that and recognizing that there's still a lot of beauty in the process. Like we make it all about the promise rather than the process of what God did in the life of Jairus. Like we don't really hear a lot about the conversation between Jairus and Jesus, but Jairus took him to his house, brought him to his daughter, like amidst all of the voices. And so I just wonder like what Jairus learned in that. Like, did that increase his faith even more? Like walking with Jesus when everyone else told him not to. Like if he would have gotten his healing right away, like he would have missed out on that, those like revelations along the way that we get mm-hmm. that then empower us to serve other people and to come alongside other people with empathy in a way that we might not have been able to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, it's so crazy that because Jesus chose not to heal this girl a year before, 2 years before, 3 years before, whatever. He chose to heal her in the middle of this crowd on this particular day, and Jairus saw it. And then Jairus could have easily given up on God for his miracle that he needed for his daughter. And instead, mm-hmm. Jesus looks at him and says, do not be afraid, just believe. Have the same kind of faith this woman had that I just honored, right?
Yeah.
Because Jesus saw her, or Jairus saw her faith.
Yeah.
It held up his when he most needed it. Mm-hmm. And then he experienced this. Jesus walks in and says to these mourners, you know, why are y'all crying? She's sleeping and not dead. And of course they laugh at him. And he says, girl, I say, get up. And she gets up and walks. And this bleeding woman got a healing, and you mm-hmm. always say she got a healing, but Jairus got a resurrection. Tell me why. So I've heard you say that to me multiple times. Mm-hmm. Why does that speak to you so much?
It speaks to me because I feel like I missed out on the healing, like in my life. Like when I evaluate my situation, I think I resonate more with the story of Jairus, which in a lot of ways I could relate to the story of the woman because she'd been sick for 12 years. But like in this story, as I read it, I resonate with that because I think I saw it was a meme. I probably saw on Instagram, but it said, God isn't going to do it for you like he did it for everyone else. And whenever like I think about that, I realize that God is coming through for me and he will show up for my situation. And he might not do it like he's doing it for everyone else, but that doesn't mean he's not coming. And I love that Jairus got to celebrate too. At the end of the story, they're both celebrating. They both get to worship a God who comes through for people, a God that finishes what he starts. And it's just nice to know that it's just because when I started out and I had expectations around what I thought my promises would be in all areas of life, if they, in the end, if they don't look like I thought they would in the beginning, it doesn't make it any less of a promise being fulfilled. Like it's actually maybe more than I could have imagined. Like maybe God's taking us on what feels like a detour to get us to like somewhere even better. Like I think he likes to exceed our expectations, but we have to kind of be open for that and ready for that and recognizing and not getting stuck in anxiety or fear or jealousy or comparison, because then we're not gonna head with Jesus to the house from like his daughter's dying. We're gonna like stick with our friends.
Yeah, why bother?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy to me because he wanted a healing and he got something that's even more impossible. I mean, there are professional mourners there. They know what dead looks like.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And he got something that's like only God could, you know, a doctor might show up to a sick person and make them better. Mm-hmm. And they'll be like, oh, a doctor had a cure, but he got a resurrection. That's crazy town. Right? Yeah. It's amazing.
And I think it just highlights like how God's power works. Like, I think we expect God to show up in one way, but it's like everyone watching, there were so many people watching. And I just wonder how that built everyone else's faith. Like they expected Jesus to act in one particular way. And he's like, I'll reveal my power to you in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. And now all these people got to see that. And today we still get to see God using his power to meet people where they are in different ways. And that builds my faith like nothing else.
Right. And we're promised resurrection.
Exactly.
Always and forever. Mm-hmm. And when we think it's the very end, it's not the very end. And that's what I love about this entire collision is that with Jesus, the story is never over. Mm-hmm. The story is never over. And I feel like a lot of us are living like the story's over. Like with our kids, we feel like, oh my gosh, they're making these choices and we're living like the story's over. Our marriage and we're living like the story's over, or with our body and we've given up leaning into health because the story is just over. And mm-hmm. with, you know, our dating life, whatever it is, or our career, or why go back to school when I'm 50? I mean, there's all these different ways that women kind of live like the story's over. But with mm-hmm. Jesus, the story is never over.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. So I brought my Bible because I was reading this verse a couple days ago, and I was like, I wonder if it'll like resonate with what we're talking about. And it's completely on point. And it's about, I just have to read it really quick.
Yeah,
it's like two verses. So it's Hebrews 12, 1-3. It's probably starting around verse 2 in the Message. It says, study how he did it because Jesus never lost sight of where he was headed. That exhilarating finish in and with God, he could put up with anything along the way, cross, shame, whatever. And now he's there in the place of honor right alongside God. And I loved that because I think we forget that we get an epic ending to our story. And Jesus got an epic ending to his story when it looked like everything was over and you should throw in the towel and quit. God came through for him. And I love that. Like if we're headed in a direction with God and we're going to have like the ability to risk everything and our faith and stake, you know, the end of our story on him, like he does come through for us. We get a resurrection mm-hmm. at the end of the day.
Yeah. The God of the epic story.
Right?
I love that.
It's so cool.
So you have said this, you know, that the bleeding woman got her healing, but Jairus got a resurrection. And my hope for you, Kristen, is that God fulfills the life you were made to live.
Thank you.
Until then, mm-hmm. what do you hold on to be true?
I hold on to the fact that God's power and promises are alive and well. And I see that in the ways that he comes through me in small ways, small little miracles and blessings on the journey towards the promise. And those remind me that God's showing up, whether that's a word of encouragement from someone when I'm having a day when I'm feeling really disappointed, or listening to a sermon or something. I don't know. There's all these, like, I want to be tuned in and paying attention mm-hmm. so I don't miss those sort of mini miracles along the way that build my faith. Otherwise, I'm going to quit and give up. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in the bigger story that God's writing with my life. And I want to jump into that with everything. So I just got to cling to his power.
That's awesome. Believing in the bigger story that God has for your life. If you guys are, I don't know, running today, cooking, driving around your car, carpooling, whatever you're up to, I just hope that you know that your story's not over. You're mid-story. You're like chapter 7, and God is coming. And if you haven't seen him come, he's on his way. And the story he wants to write with your life is going to blow your mind. So choose faith and don't listen to the voice of fear anymore. I hope you're encouraged. And if you think that there's someone in your life that would be blessed by hearing this podcast, pass it along. Share the podcast with people. Our hope is that this can encourage women all over the place. And if you want to keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram at we.collide and on Facebook as Collide. And you can visit our website at wecollide.net for resources, information on our next event, blog posts, if you want to keep colliding. I hope you have an amazing week and we'll catch you next time.